Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
And welcome to Mental Health Monday, another Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You're with Radio City Talk. Thanks for checking us out today. Got another great guest lined up on the programme today. Many people have been in contact this week talking about events that they're involved in and things like that. We'll be doing that as part of Mental Health Extra with Jake Mills tomorrow, just after 2 o'clock as well. And if you subscribe to the podcast, that will automatically appear in your podcast feed as well. If you want to talk about mental health, then this is the place to do it. We do it every Monday here on Radio City Talk. Drop me your emails and tell me your own stories if you want to be involved. mick@radiocity.co.uk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk. There is a brilliant community of mental health advisors, therapists, people who are just getting wise to the idea that you can now talk about mental health. They're all out there, and we're hoping to be a real hub for that here on Mental Health Monday. It's what we've been doing for the last 18 months or so, what we will continue to do. And I think we'll prove that with our next guest who joins us on the programme now. Dave Cottrell is with us. Dave, it's great to see you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
You have your own mental health podcast.
I do. It's called Master the Mind, Master Anything.
Excellent stuff. Just tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do? What's your day job?
Well, I've got I basically run two businesses. One of them's called CoFit Personal Training, which is a personal training business, and the other one is Mindset by Dave, which is a mindset coaching business. Essentially, I'm a health coach, but I'm someone who doesn't want to focus just on the physical aspect of health, but also the mental aspect of it too.
It's an interesting combination, that, isn't it? Because traditionally people, if they think, I want to get myself fit, I want to get myself healthy, naturally they think about the physical side of things. But actually you're of a mindset, literally, whereby you consider both together.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it sort of happened, I would almost say, by chance. Like, my own backstory, I used to be 23 stone. I went down to 14 stone, but I also was diagnosed with type 2 bipolar disorder when I was 14. And I found that by looking after my own physical health, my mental health was never in a better place. And then once I actually became a coach and was working, I started off in the coaching capacity of just doing the physical health because I wanted to help other people on the same journey as me. But then once I found that I had that external accountability and I had people to look after, that was actually the biggest and most important boost for my own mental health that I've ever faced.
Thanks for coming on the programme today, Dave. We're going to hear about your own personal story. Can I ask you about the when you now see clients, I guess you call them clients now, who come to see you and they talk to you about physical changes that they want to see?
Yeah.
Do you, because of your own experience, then think, well, what are those mental health changes that you might want to make as well? Do you try and include that in regard to what people ask of you and ask of themselves when they're signing up?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest questions I like to ask a client is, what else, what does this mean to you? What does the actual weight loss or the muscle gain, what outside of the obvious will this actually, does this mean to you or will this give you? And that usually gives me a bit of an insight into the person and what is truly driving them, because it's actually very rare that just weight loss or just muscle gain is the real issue. And now I think I'm known for specifically working with the mental health side of things. So I deal with a lot of people who actually come and say, look, I have anxiety or I have depression. I don't want to be in a busy gym environment. And I know that you're the guy for this. So it's like that I'll actually start and from that first almost interaction, know that, okay, we're going to be working on a slightly different pace here than we would if we were, say, just jumping straight into a gym and just like hitting it hard kind of thing.
And with that in mind as well, do you have to sort of carefully select clients, or do you have to give like clients a full briefing, or do they come to you naturally because they know you offer a more holistic approach, if you like?
I think it's mostly the latter. It's mostly that they come to me because of it. And a lot of the times they're quite upfront with that. So as a result, for my clients, the hardest step isn't the stuff we do in the gym. It's that first step. I've got one of my clients who recently said to me that she sat on an email to me for 18 months before sending it because she was just really kind of, well, she was extremely anxious and couldn't, you know, face the idea of it. She'd had a bad experience with another PT who had literally told her to man up and get on with it. A female PT that had said that as well. And that had put her off the gym for sort of this long period of time. So when she came to me, that was it. She'd been waiting around to kind of send this email. And I guess that is one of the biggest problems is making that first step, because there's so much motivation out there for people who are already motivated. But for the person who's, you know, anxious, depressed, stressed, it's making that first step is terrifying.
Because I wanted to ask you about that from a personal trainer point of view. You know, this idea of, you know, the drill sergeant whereby if you have any expression that you want to be a bit healthier than you currently are, then you suddenly need to be able to run, you know, 10K in less than 15 minutes. And if you don't, a man will shout at you that you're a maggot. Either you're pathetic or you're a worm or you'll never make anything of yourself, you know. Or if you go to a spin class, and after 25 minutes of an hour class, you feel like you want to die. and someone's going to throw you back on the bike until your legs fall off, all things like that. I think that that culture, or the idea of that culture, can genuinely put people off the idea of going into those sorts of environments. And I think it's one of the reasons why setups like Couch to 5K have been so popular. Because there's almost an acceptance, there's no bottom level. Doesn't mm-hmm. matter at what stage you're coming in. It's about personal improvement and it's about you getting on board with that. But in that regard, I guess many people might not seek to make those physical changes because they're worried about that culture, that they won't be able to keep up with that. And actually that can hold people from making those changes, from getting fit, from getting healthy. And that can have its own repercussions itself.
Absolutely. I mean, the expression go hard or go home. It's like, well, what if hard for you is actually standing up from the couch five times? What if going hard for you is making that first email to someone who you are terrified is going to judge you? I mean, I'm not here to say that any other personal trainer's way is right or wrong. And I don't particularly think my way is any more right than anyone else's way. I just think it's different because, as you've said there, those people, I've had clients that have said to me, in fact, I've had clients that want to go for Army or Navy selection. And they're like, can you be a bit more mean to me? And I try it for about 10 minutes and I'm like, that's just not me. It's like, but you know, some people need that, and that's fine, because each one of us has our own capacity about what we can take. And it's like, yeah, it's what, you know, the whole go hard or go home, it's about your hard, and your hard might be someone else's easy, and your easy might be someone else's hard. And it's understanding that every single person is an individual.
Tell us about yourself, if you can. You mentioned weight loss.
Yep.
And the amount of weight that you lost, you got up to 23 stone.
Yeah, 23 stone six, to be specific.
And what age were you then?
I was 24.
24 years of age, yeah. 23 and a bit stone. At what point was weight becoming an issue for you?
The thing is, I'd like to say that it was this big inspiring rock bottom story, and it just wasn't. Like, I'm 6'2", 6'3" in the right pair of shoes, and that means I kind of hold my weight reasonably well, even when I was 23 stone. I never really thought of myself as fat. I mean, I had extremely low self-esteem, but I didn't go around feeling like depressed about being fat. I had my other reasons to be depressed. And it was just a point where it was actually at a New Year party, and I always use sort of the whole comedy approach as your suit of armor. So I'd make jokes about it. I had a T-shirt that said "Fat people are harder to kidnap." It's like I owned my fatness. And then one New Year, one of my friends turns around to me, and we're about seven drinks in by this point, and he's like, "Right, next New Year, we're gonna take our tops off, and we're gonna lose as much weight as we can between now and next year. We'll take our tops off, and then the person who's improved the most will get £500 off the other person." Or it might have even been 50 quid. I can't even remember. It was never paid out. But because I was nice and kind of a few drinks in, I was like, yeah, I'll take my top off now. I don't care, and all the rest of it. But then I started it after a few weeks later, and he was about 2 stone overweight and I was about 10 stone overweight. So I was like, well, I'm guaranteed to win this, because the biggest improvement is a very subjective term. So I thought, you know, it's almost like I had the most to lose, so therefore I had the most to gain. And that was how I approached it. And I started losing weight quite rapidly. I lost 3 stone in the first 3 months. And in that run, I went down 6 stone in total over the course of about 6 to 8 months. And basically, that was, I said, you know, I was never bothered about my weight, but I had seriously low self-esteem. I wasn't the type of person that people gave compliments to. And I found myself in this position where suddenly everyone was like, oh my God, you look really great. You know, you look fantastic. What, you know, what's the secret? What's this? All the rest of it. And the secret at the time was really, really silly, which was just eat less and move more, which sounds really common sense. But until you've already ate less and you've already moved more, and now you even need to eat even less and then move even more, and it becomes an obsession. And it was a point where I was just unhealthy. I was physically healthier, potentially. I was probably less of a diabetes risk or whatever we want to look at health markers, but mentally I was drained. I'd do a 10K race and then I'd go home and my family would be having a barbecue and I'd just sleep through the whole thing because I didn't have enough in my system to replenish and recover from all the excessive work that I was doing.
And I guess at the time, people would have been going, oh, looking great there, Dave. You're looking really well. But all the while, you were thinking, well, I don't feel any better, or I can appreciate there might be long-term benefits to this, but it hurts at the same time. There was somebody I saw on social media a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about the fact that weight and well-being are always perceived to be the two things. And there was somebody who was doing a photo shoot, yeah. and someone had shown, oh, look, don't you look amazing in this particular photo shoot that they were. And they were saying, yeah, but I remember that day where I couldn't get out of bed in the morning to get there. I felt terribly unhappy throughout the entire photo shoot. I was desperately sad. I went home and I cried myself to sleep that night. But that's the thing that you then look at and go, don't you look wonderful? Yeah. Aren't you great? And actually, that's what we're talking about, the physical and the mental health working together is when you get the real benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, I went down to 14 stone two at my lightest. I was doing Muay Thai and my instructor said to me, you can fight when you get to 90 kilos. I like external influence. I like goals that are set by an external source. I'm good at remaining accountable to others much better than accountable to myself. And so he said that. But the thing was, I wasn't happy at 14 stone, and I'm about 17 stone now, and I'm way happier. Like, my mental health's never been in a better position. I mean, on my bad days, I'll still argue the opposite, but if we look at the big picture, I've never been in a better position. And it's like, there's a big thing. I wrote a video about 2 years ago called It's Not Just About Losing Weight. And a lot of people, they want weight loss because they expect weight loss to be this big sort of cornerstone of health. And really, it's like, okay, as I said, when I start with a client, it's like, what is it for? Is it because do you want to feel more confident? Did someone put you down about your weight? Do you want to kind of stick it to them? It's like, do you feel like you can't go to the beach, or do you feel like, you know, you can't go to a party or whatever it is? What is it that you're trying, you know, do you think you're going to be happier when you get there? Because unfortunately, what happens, and what happened to me, was I did get there and I wasn't any happier. Now, when you've got the thing to focus on in front of you, saying, I'll be happy when, which is another way of saying, I won't be happy until. But if you say, I'll be happy when I get to 14 stone, and I was, I did, I went in and got in the ring, I did that fight. And then the next morning, I was like, right, now what? So now when I feel sad, now when I feel down, I can't hide behind the idea that it's my weight that's keeping me down. So now what? So I really want to help anyone that is thinking about it this way to say, right, well, what do you really truly want out of life? What is, you know, the motto of my mindset coaching is the master the mind, master anything, which is the name of the podcast. But before that, it was called Your Progress Is Our Passion. And progress in whatever area of life has always been what I wanted people to achieve. And it's like, right, what does that look like for you? What is your progress? Not somebody else's progress. Not what Instagram tells you it should be. Not what Love Island tells you it should be. What is your progress?
I think we had a little bell in the corner for when somebody says something really profound. We should ring it. And I think, and we've just had one of those moments on Mental Health Monday. That phrase, which I think everybody knows when they say, I'll be happy when, where they'll be like, and people will say, how are you getting on at work? And you're like, oh, happy when I get through the summer. I'll be happy when I've got through Christmas. I'll be happy when I... And it's that thing of that idea of you make a decision to delay your happiness, or you close the door to happiness until a moment that you've set in the future arrives. Just creates a period of sort of profound misery out of a decision that you've made. It's quite... But we do it all as... Oh, I'll tell you what... It's Wednesday. How are you? Oh, I'll be happy when it's Friday. Of course, I mean, of course, people will be happy when it's Friday. But this idea actually was, I'm not going to be happy until that point. And when that Friday comes, that's when I'm going to feel happy. It may well be that you are. But then, as you say, you may also have a thing where Friday was great, but then you feel a bit ill on Saturday. And then suddenly that moment was too fleeting to really get any enjoyment out of.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've one thing that I kind of often push people towards is I've made this video called You Are Enough about a year ago. And it says people often get stuck in saying they'll be happy when I have a better job, when I find my soulmate, whatever, you know, when I lose weight, when whatever it may be. And as I said before, what you've truly saying there is I won't be happy until I find my soulmate. Now, people get confused with the idea that being happy and being content in who you are right now and feeling good enough as you are right now is going to switch off your ambition. It's like you're either got to be happy, and so you can either be happy or you can be ambitious. You can't be the two at the same time. And it's utter nonsense. It's like I find the people that are most driven and achieve the most are the ones that actually get up in the morning and feel good about themselves. They're happy where they are now. They know they might be somewhere better at the end of the day. And then they go to bed satisfied because they're like, yeah, okay, I might still not be where I want to be, but today I made progress towards that. It was as good as it could be right now. And whereas in the other type of person, it'd be like, get to the end of the day and go, oh, that was rubbish. It's like walking up to a child when it's trying to learn to walk and sweeping its legs out from underneath it and saying, what are you doing that for? Don't bother doing that until you can get across the whole room. It's like when we put ourselves down, we slow our progress. Being happy in who you are and what you're doing and what you're working towards is actually not contradictory to ambition.
Dave Cottrell is with us on Mental Health Monday. He's a personal trainer in mind and body, as we've been hearing on the programme as well. He's got his own podcast as well running through Podbean. It's called Master the Mind, Master Anything. He's on Instagram as CotFitPT. I think that's right, isn't
CoFit,
it?
CoFit.
Oh, I've got an extra T in there. CoFitPT and Facebook as well, Dave Cottrell. Cottrell, CoTTRELL.
Yes.
I've got that spelling right. And again, the tagline, Master the Mind, Master Anything. We will continue our conversations next here on Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk.
Mental Health Monday.
On Radio City Talk.
With Mick Coyle.
Tackling the stigma.
Radio City Talk.
My name's Mick. We've got Dave Cottrell in the studio for Mental Health Monday this week. CoFitPT on Instagram. He's on Facebook as well. And his tagline, Master the Mind, Master Anything, is also part of his podcast that he runs as well, where you can find out more about the work that he does. Can I ask you about bipolar, Dave? It's something that you touched on in regard to your own sort of personal issues that you've had as well. How does that bipolar affect you on a day-to-day basis?
It's more of a, well, it's not really a day-to-day thing, I guess. It's a bit of a roller coaster with unpredictable highs and lows. It's not like a set track like an existing roller coaster. Nowadays, it affects me. It's kind of alternating periods of very high and very low. I'm very grateful to have what's called type 2 bipolar disorder, which means that it's less severe and therefore, as a result, a little bit easier to function. I mean, that might be a subjective term, but what that means is that I have periods, usually used to be extended periods of low, and it used to be very, very short transient periods of high. Now, in a period of low would be, I'd be curled up on the couch in a depression, unable to move, very low energy, not able to look after my kids, not able to go to work, none of that stuff. And then a period of high would be, people would ask me if I was on drugs when in the middle of the day. And it's like, you know, thinking, well, whatever he's had, how much caffeine have you had, all this kind of thing. And nowadays, I had a belief at the time when it was happening that I always used to say, I'm always like this when it was in the lows. And then when it was in the highs, I'd be like, oh, well, this is just going to come crashing down sooner or later. And in my head and the way I related to it at the time was almost treating the lows like they were these interminable things that stretched out forever. And the highs as if these were the very transient things that basically didn't even really exist. And I didn't realize whilst in that that's completely contradictory. It's like if you have a condition where there are ups and downs, there are ups and downs. And it was only when I went through a mental health service through my doctor's surgery, where I was dealing with a primary care practitioner who taught me mindfulness and taught me the expression, this too shall pass. And that actually sums it up perfectly, is like the fact that, yes, if you're feeling and you're in the depression, this too shall pass. It does. And if you're in the manic hyper stage, this too shall pass. And it's learning to kind of work with those two things. Nowadays, as long as I keep working with my momentum, as long as I look after my own self-care, which is a huge thing, there's a lot less time spent in the lows. And I actually, my work itself can actually trigger quite a lot of the highs. It's like I find, especially the mindset work, when I work with a client for an hour and they are changed by the end of that hour, it's like it's such a buzz. It's like it almost sends me towards that sort of more manic period. And now it's actually strange for me because I'm having to manage the mania better than more than the depression, when it was completely the other way around.
It's interesting that, because it's almost as if what you're saying there is that the environment sort of plays into one or the other, almost as if you've got an element of not control over it, but actually a sense of what might lead you to those highs or those lows. A sense of not control over it, but a sense that there is an element to it which you might be able to put yourself in control of.
Yeah. I mean, there's a huge argument of whether this is whether a mental illness is a chemical or a biological thing that we can't do anything about, or whether it's something that's completely in our control. And the argument misses the kind of general point that it's probably both. My personal experience is it's a bit of both. There are definitely things I can do that contribute towards the bad mood now, or contribute towards a good mood. Now, don't get me wrong, there are certain days that no matter what I do, I still end up there. And certain techniques, like, say, for example, a technique that might work on a good day, it might get me feeling 10% better, 15% better. On a bad day, it might only get me feeling 1% or 2% better. But I've got to stand back and say, well, that 1% or 2% is better than zero. And sometimes it's like, okay, yeah, I'm going to keep on working with gratitude or affirmations or visualization or even just writing my thoughts down and reframing them and looking at them from a different point of view. And it might not work to the same level as when I'm feeling okay, but it will do something. And that is worth it. That is kind of, you've got to get your head around the fact that that is actually worth doing, even though it'll be probably feel completely exhausting at the time.
You're on a sort of a mission in 2018 to change a life every day?
Positively impact one life per day for free.
And is this in regard to, you talked about that idea that the reaction that you get yourself to being able to help other people gives you that sense of high that may only come with the pluses or the high points from bipolar. So actually you're trying to do something for free and you're getting it out there through social media and email and all sorts to make a positive impact on people's lives. You've done hundreds already this year.
I think it's close to I'm going into the last 100 now, I think. I think I've done 265 or thereabouts. I've not updated the list in about 2 weeks.
And we are, the start of August as we speak right now?
Yes.
So you're on track?
I'm a little bit ahead of schedule, but I'm about to have a holiday. So
sounds like you deserve a holiday if you're changing people's lives every single day of the year. So give us an example of the sort of things that you've been doing.
Oh, you see, this is the thing. It ranges in a lot of places. Easier example was a client who'd recently had a baby. I took some food around for her, because I knew that she was exhausted and she would find it difficult to cook for herself and she wanted desperately to stay. I told her that she didn't have to stay on a plan at that point, obviously, but I took some food around for her. I do Tough Mudders with my physical client team and I took a load of them out as a surprise to Total Ninja in Manchester. I just basically said to them, meet me at 4 o'clock with your trainers on, and they didn't know what they were doing. Those are the sort of nicer, easier things, but it's been working up right the way up to a lot of one-to-one mindset conversations. So my personal training sessions, I've done one-to-ones there for free. I've done one-to-ones on mindset for free. And the heaviest things, I guess, I've worked with there is I've worked with 5 male potential suicides this year. Sorry, that's one of the hardest things for me to talk about. And I've worked with quite a number of sexual assault cases, helping people to change their mindset around that, like helping them towards feeling better off the back of that. And then there's 2 people that I decided that 1 hour of the time just wasn't enough because, you know, I love doing this type of thing. So there are 2 people that I've been training completely for free all year and welcome. And so once a week I see them and they come and see me for 1 hour of personal training. And yeah,
it's kind of like a selfless act, but then I get a sense as well that you're doing it for yourself as well. That's like that's the idea. There's no such thing as a selfless act, but you feel a benefit to doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think. Yeah, I would say it's more selfless than selfish. Maybe just, I would also absolutely agree that, and you know what, it's something I would actually recommend some of my clients, particularly the ones that have. The ones that have depression or the ones that feel ineffective or feel like they've got no purpose in this world or no place, is actually doing selfless acts is one way of saying, well, actually, you know what? I can help somebody else. I've had clients that I've got them to a position where they can then go on to tell their story of mental health and empower other people. So actually doing these things, yeah, it's a knock-on effect. I like to think of it, and this is actually going to be the first time I've talked about what I'm doing with A Life a Day next year. Anywhere, including not even on my own social media, but I plan to run this for at least 3 years. And in 2019, I'm going to call it A Life a Day, Pay It Forward, where the rules of A Life a Day now are it's completely free. I will not sell. I haven't sold to anybody off of it. Some people, if they ask me about what other services I offer, I say, phone me a different time. I won't on that call. It's not to get you into a funnel. And the second thing is it's completely confidential. So I can't share all the success stories that I really want to, which would be amazing to be able to do so, but I completely honor their confidence. But next year there's going to be a request. It's going to be the only request, and only a request, not a demand, is that the person I speak to, each one of the people I speak to, because I'm hoping to speak to another 365 people in 2019, I'm going to ask them at the end of it to pay it forward, to go and do something nice for someone else. Because I believe in karma in the practical sense of it. Whether the religious sense of it or spiritual sense of it is there or not, I have no idea. But the practical sense of it is, if you do something good for somebody else and that inspires them to go on and do something good for somebody else, then it all kind of works its way around and there is more positivity out there.
No, absolutely. That's hugely commendable as well. And actually, that idea of paying it forward is kind of a long-standing idea. But actually, to do it within the mental health field, or do it within the field in which you're speaking as well, will make a difference. Because I think it's about growing a community. Yeah. I think it's about growing that idea that that help is out there. I found it and you can find it, and it might come and find you as well.
Yeah.
Plus, you can seek it, and it'll, you know, and you can track it down yourself as well. And it wises people up as well to the opportunities that are there, and it can come in all different forms as well. That it might be, you know, personal trainer, the mindset stuff from yourself, from somebody else. It might be, you know, a bit of shopping that you go and pick up for a neighbor, decorating, painting, whatever it might be as well. And that improves everybody's well-being without ever talking about bipolar or mental health. You're actually just talking about society, aren't we? We're talking about society, we're talking about community, sense of self-worth, and actually seeing worth in yourself. What can I offer to other people?
Yeah, and that actually, funnily enough, leads into the 2020 version of it, which is called A Life a Day, It Takes a Village, where the idea is that I actually try and get people over the next 18 months that I'm dealing with, some of them to commit to doing multiple of these, so not just passing it on to one. If I can get other people to commit to doing 365 of them, then I will do it. I don't know quite how much I'll be able to get people to commit on that one just yet, but that's the idea, is that I believe there is so much good stuff happening in mental health. There are so many great things out there. As I've been doing this, I've come across so many other people, and since I've been running the podcast, you just come across so much great stuff that's out there, but just nobody knows about it. And I genuinely believe that by bringing a lot of people together who are all on the same mission, that we can totally change the face of mental health in the UK.
Where can people find out more information about the work that you're involved in and the podcast itself?
So the podcast, I think if you just go on iTunes and search for Master the Mind, Master Anything, or on Podbean. On Podbean, it's still under the old address, I think, which is ypop.podbean.com. So ypop for Your Progress is Our Passion. I would say the two best places to find me and find anything about me is facebook.com/mindsetbydave. Or Instagram, which is @CoFitPT. I do have a thing called a Mindset Minute 4 days a week on Instagram. So it's a minute of mindset topics on video, chatting about that every single day, talking about technology and how we use it at the minute. And I think, and I basically reply to all my direct messages, unless they are, please like my page for 7,000 more followers. Sometimes I even reply to them, ironically. But yeah, the Instagram page, which is @CoFitPT. So CoFitPT. And then if you want to just email me, if you want to be part of A Life a Day, then dave@cofitpt.com is the way to get hold of me. And if you just put the subject A Life a Day, I will, and you want an hour of my time for a call, or if you're local to sort of the Southport area, you want to come and stop by and use the gym for an hour and just chat about your mental health or chat about your physical health, then just basically drop me a line and we'll get it sorted.
Brilliant. There's loads of information there. If you download the Mental Health Monday podcast, you can listen back to that over and over again to your heart's content, get all the information. And if it's useful to you through the social media or speaking directly to Dave, we'd urge you to do that. Before you go, one last question. We talked at the start about people going to the gym, maybe feel intimidated about the idea of getting themselves sorted from a physical point of view. Is there a mental health equivalent of that? That people feel a certain way about themselves and aren't even prepared to begin with tackling some of the issues that they face?
I would say almost certainly. I ran an event called Me Again recently, which is all about stress. And I thought, this is it. Not everyone's willing to put their hand up and go, I have anxiety. But a lot of people will stress. There's not as much stigma. There totally is. Like, a lot of people did not want to come to that event because they've come to my general mindset ones before, but the actual stress event, which I personally thought had much more highly targeted information, which would have helped everyone in that room. And I put a bit of feedback out, the request out there saying to try and see why it didn't do as well as some of the other events. And so many people came back to me and said, look, I couldn't sit in a room full of people. First of all, like, a lot of them thought they were going to have to talk. And that's why with Hope Street, who I met you guys through, it's like, it's important with them. It's like, yes, you can just come and listen and get involved. There's definitely the first step, I think, on any journey, mental or physical, is always the hardest. And a lot of times people take a first step, what makes them even feel even worse. So they'll go to the, you know, the A&E centre where they'll go and try and check in for mental health, and they'll be told that they have to go via the doctor, and they'll go via the doctor, and they'll end up with a 9-month wait for CBT or whatever it may be. There are many other things out there, and maybe you just took the wrong first step. There's so many people out there that are doing great things that, you know, you could be a part of and could help you.
Dave, thank you for your time today. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Really appreciate you joining us. Dave Cottrell, our guest on this week's show. Like I say, the podcast will be available to download and the video version as well of Mental Health Monday, which you can watch as well. Check out Dave via Facebook, Dave Cottrell, COTTRELL, CoFitPT as well on Instagram. And if you want to check out the iTunes podcast for his own podcast, Master the Mind, Master Anything, although as we heard, he's right across all the social media, and you can even reach him on the end of a phone. Dave Cottrell, I guess, this week on Mental Health Monday. If you'd like to be involved in Mental Health Monday yourself, you'd like to get involved in the programme, we would love to hear from you. Do drop me your emails, mick@radiocity.co.uk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk. We do Mental Health Monday every Monday here on Radio City Talk. We'll have a Mental Health Extra as well with Jake Mills from Chasing the Stigma tomorrow, where we'll talk about some of the issues raised on today's programme and give you some mentions as well with some of the events and things like that that you've been involved in too. mick@radiocity.co.uk. And Mental Health Monday returns next week on Radio City Talk.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
And here comes a little bit of an extra just for you podcast listeners on Radio City Talk's Mental Health Monday podcast. George Green is the name of a footballer who burst onto the scene as a young man at Everton Football Club. But within a few years, people were wondering why his career hadn't taken off in the way that people had predicted. Well, it turns out George had an incredible story to tell from a mental health point of view. It involved any number of different issues, including addiction. George shared his story with Matt Jones on Radio City Talk, and it's a really interesting one, and maybe one which we should always bear in mind when thinking about how we treat our professional sports stars. George's story from Radio City Talk.
I've been in rehab when I was 18 year old through Everton, and they put me down to the North London Priory, and that was through for cocaine. I then came out and struggled again with that. I went into another one in Southend when I was 20 years old, and coming out of that one, it really opened my eyes to know that I have got a problem, and I accepted that, and I've started to do work from it and build a life around recovery. And at the moment, I'm doing very well, and I'm really happy with my life.
So, how do you fall into that as an 18-year-old?
It's difficult. I think it's the people you hang around with massively. What path you're willing to take? Are you willing to, in my opinion, or what I've been through, do you want to be a footballer or do you not want to be a footballer? At the time, I really didn't know what I wanted, so I went in and out of drugs and alcohol, and that was the path I chose. And I'm glad that I've seen the light now at 22 years old, rather than coming over 10 years down the line, that, and my life was pretty much over. So, yeah, that's how it goes from there.
Is it a big problem in football from what you've seen, do you think?
I think it goes on a lot more than what people know. Obviously, I don't think footballers are willing to admit that they have a problem. If they do have a problem, I think it probably would have to happen what I did at going so low to probably know. But I think it is in football, I'm sure. And I've seen it firsthand in football that people do have a problem with drinking drugs, yeah.
And in terms of your mental health then, how did that all link up?
I think I've struggled from a kid, and I knew I was different. I knew I didn't fit in, and Everton took me on to see a couple of psychiatrists, and they probably said the same. But it took persistence from me, from my family, to actually get a diagnosis, and it's taken 2 years through the NHS to get a diagnosis, but I finally got one, and I'm taking the medication for it, and it really is working for me.
It's interesting because I remember when you were at Tranmere, we interviewed you after that game against Wimbledon, and for an 18-year-old lad, you were so confident, you were so bubbly, you'd scored that goal, so you're on top of the world, and you'd never think that all this was going on behind it.
No, you can mask it, so that's just a first-class example of masking it, you know. I was away from that. I was probably going out that night that you spoke to me. I was probably doing what I was doing and covering it up. But when the limelight's on you, you milk it as much as you can. You love that sort of limelight, and I guess that's what keeps you going.
Mm. What was the lowest you felt then in terms of your mental health?
Obviously, I've tried to kill myself twice, or not necessarily kill myself, but two cries for attention with two overdoses. And I think that was the lowest point. And I think that's when people knew then with me that George needs help, and we're going to do everything we can to get it. And my family, my girlfriend, football clubs that I've been at, every single one of them have been so supportive, and that's been brilliant that I've had that support.
I know it must be very difficult to try and explain, but can you try and put into words what was going through your head when you did make those two attempts?
I think it was on the back of of taking drinking drugs, so that didn't help. Obviously, your mind's different when doing that. But I think it's in term where not speaking out and talking to people, you know. I think if I picked up the phone that night or the day before, then that probably wouldn't have happened because I've got people around me and support around me where they'd have talked me out of it or said do something better or do something differently. But unfortunately, I didn't, and I got to that low point. However, for me, I think I needed to get to that point to then recover to the point where I am now. So.
And we've talked about your football career as well. How do you think these two go hand in hand? Because you've said your clubs have been extremely helpful, but at the same time, do you think maybe being at Everton and then dropping down the leagues a little bit had an effect on you?
Oh, definitely, because I was earning this much money and then I'd left to earn less money. I was then, my bills were catching up to me. I couldn't afford to pay my bills, so that wasn't helping. I had 1,000 friends when I was at Everton, and then when I left there, I had one friend. Mm. So in terms of support and stuff like that, I didn't have any when I left. When I was leaving when I wasn't at football, I mean, from my home life, I didn't have as much support. Mm. So that was difficult. Yeah,
it's amazing, isn't it, how you can be at the top of the world as such with all those friends, and then when you need them most, they're not there for you.
Yeah, and I think I've learned massively. I don't really have a friend, you know. My best friend is my partner Charlie, and we confide in everything in each other because that's all I need in my life right now is my partner, my close family, and my two children. So yeah,
well, it's great to see you looking so well, so happy with such a great family as well. Over the last year, how much have things improved for you?
Oh, massively, you know. It's hard to explain how it's improved without nobody who knows me knows me personally to know how much I've changed. You know, I can put so much on social media, like I have done with two pictures that I put on as a pinned tweet, and I think that proves how far I actually have come. But without seeing me personally, that's difficult for me to say. But my family see a massive change, my partner sees a massive change. I'm starting to become more trustworthy. And I reap the benefits. I get to spend quality time with my family, with my daughter, and that's priceless. Nothing can compare to that for me.
If you head to George's Twitter, @George_Green10, do have a look at these two photos, because the one that you've put on from when you signed for Chester compared to the one from 2 years earlier when you were at Ossett, you look about 15 years younger now.
Yeah, and I look rough as anything, you know. But I think that goes to prove the work that I've put into how far I've come, that it is possible. And people who are at that low stage, if you don't expect results instantly. It is work. You've got to put the graft in. But I'm sure if you do that, then you will reap the benefits from it.
Absolutely. And just finally then, you're with Chester now. Yeah. And it's great to see you looking so well. It's great to see you back in England. What are the aspirations for the future for you as a footballer?
I signed for Chester because I know the manager. That's the be-all and end-all. And it's a platform for me to go and work on. Obviously, my aim in football is to play as high as possible. Some people might not like this, but to earn as much as possible, as it's only a short career. So I'm there to say, use it as a platform. Mm. And I don't think Chester would mind me saying that. Use it as a platform to go and kick on properly in my career and play at a level that I deserve to play at.
That's George Green speaking to our reporter, Matt Jones. Thanks for Matt supporting the show, Mental Health Monday. And the podcast returns next week.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
On Radio City Talk.